This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Edward R. Murrow launched a radio series in 1951 called This I Believe. Each installment featured someone, often someone famous, reading a personal essay about the guiding principles of his or her life. This I Believe was recently revived and airs regularly on Morning Edition and All Things Considered. My guest Jay Allison hosts the series and co-created it with Dan Gettiman. They've also just edited a book and a collection of companion CDs called This I Believe that feature essays from the new series along with ones from the original series. Allison is considered one of the most important independent producers in the history of public radio, and he's won all the big awards, including 5 Peabodys. He lives in Cape Cod and founded 3 radio stations to serve the area. He also founded Transom.org, a website that serves as a showcase for audio pieces and a forum for radio producers. It was the first website to win a Peabody. Let's start with Edward R. Murrow's essay that launched This I Believe in 1951.
We hardly need to be reminded that we are living in an age of confusion. A lot of us have traded in our beliefs for bitterness and cynicism, or for a heavy package of despair, or even a quivering portion of hysteria. Around us all, now high like a distant thunderhead, now close upon us with the wet, choking intimacy of a London fog, there is an enveloping cloud of fear. There is a physical fear, the kind that drives some of us to flee our homes and burrow into the ground in the bottom of a Montana valley, like prairie dogs, to try to escape, if only for a little while, the sound and the fury of the A-bombs or the hell bombs or whatever may be coming.
That's Edward Murrow introducing the original series, This I Believe. Jay Allison, welcome to Fresh Air.
Hi, Terry.
No, Murrow talks in his commentary about us living in an age of fear and confusion. Do you feel like we are still in that kind of age?
Well, don't you? Yes, I do. And I think we're afraid of each other. And we are certainly afraid of the other. And partly because we don't understand them. And I think there's something so disarming about hearing someone and hearing them on the radio, and they sneak past your defenses and you can't help sense them as human beings. You know, we don't have ear lids, I always say, and it leaves us a little bit vulnerable to ambush by the emotion that's contained in another person's voice.
Your new book and the CDs that come with it bring together new essays written for your version of This, I Believe, and combine that with some of the essays recorded for the original 1950s series. And since the new essays are airing a lot on NPR, I thought we'd go back and listen to another one from the 1950s. And this one features Margaret Sanger, who founded the first birth control clinic in the United States in 1916 and founded the American Birth Control League, which later became Planned Parenthood. And this is her talking a little bit about working, you know, fighting for of the availability of contraception. Do you want to say anything about this, Jay, before we hear it?
Her essay, it begins in a way that is resonant with a lot of the essays that are written for us now. And they are about belief forged in hardship and tested by difficulty and in proximity to death and illness, which are the times when life becomes most precious and you maybe think most deeply about it. So many of our essays come as a result of an experience with illness, particularly cancer these days. But Margaret Sanger begins her essay saying, "All our basic convictions must be tested and transmuted in the crucible of experience. And sometimes the more bitter the experience, the more valid the purified belief."
Well, I don't think I ever heard Margaret Sanger's voice before hearing this commentary. So why don't we hear it? This is from the 1950s version of This, I Believe.
As a nurse, I was in contact with the ill and the infirm. I knew something about the health and disease of bodies. But for a long time, I was baffled at the tremendous personal problems of life, of marriage, of living, and just of being. Here, indeed, was a challenge to build beyond thyself. I believed it was my duty to place motherhood on a higher level than enslavement and accident. For these beliefs, I was denounced, arrested. I was in and out of police courts and higher courts, and indictments hung over my life for several years. But nothing could alter my beliefs, because I saw these as truths, and I stubbornly stuck to my convictions.
That's Margaret Sanger, as recorded in the early 1950s for the radio series This I Believe. Jay Allison produces the new version of This I Believe, which has been running on NPR programs, and now he's edited a book and CD collection of new and old This I Believe essays. You've done a lot of reports over the years for NPR and also for Nightline, but you've also done a lot over the years facilitating other people to tell their stories and to make their programs. And I guess I'm wondering why you've wanted to spend so much time facilitating other people's ability to use the audio medium to do their work and to tell their stories.
Payback. I was an aimless youth and wandering through Washington at the time that public radio, National Public Radio, particularly began. And a guy there, Keith Talbot, the same person who got my friend Ira Glass into radio, loaned me a tape recorder, a little reel-to-reel machine, and said, "Hey, look, we're just looking for interesting stuff." And you know, I'd been a theater director, and I was at loose ends, and this tape recorder organized my life. I felt like it gave me permission to go out and find out about things I didn't know about and people I didn't know about, and then take maybe those theatrical skills and put them to use, shaping what they'd told me and try to find out what was essential about it. And it was liberating, and it also seemed as though it was the point of what we should be doing on public radio, which is giving us all a chance to speak and listen. And I love that idea. I love the notion that we could have and use this precious little space on the radio dial to talk to each other in decent and revealing ways and funny ways and real ways. So I just started every way I could to kind of pass that on. And I do it in all sorts of ways now with I buy tape recorders on eBay and loan them out, and I work with people in telling their stories. I've got websites that are built to help people figure out how to use the gear and get their stuff on the radio. And it's endlessly gratifying and much more interesting than telling my own story over and over again.
So you know, you mentioned one of the things you do now. You have a website called transom.org. in which you showcase the work of new producers and people who aren't producers but just want to work with audio.
Yeah, just people.
Yeah, so talk a little bit about what the purpose of Transom is.
It's kind of a master class and a workshop and an audition stage, and we invite great storytellers to come hold forth for a month at a time. Everyone from people like Norman Corwin and Studs Terkel to Sarah Vowell and Ira Glass, and then people from other media, writers like Rick Moody or filmmakers like Errol Morris, all talking about this kind of documentary work and trying to figure out how to tell about life in an honest and in new ways, too. I think a lot of what we do on public radio tends to sound like what we did yesterday. And Transom's very much dedicated to the idea that we got to figure out how to change the tone, how to change the style. So we invite people to make their own stories. We give them all the tools. So there are pages and pages and pages there of everything from, you know, what microphone to buy and how to work a digital audio editing system and all that stuff. And then people send us what they made, and we put that on the site. And now we have an hour-long radio broadcast we distribute to stations called the Transom Radio Hour that puts it all together. It puts together the, you know, the eminent storytellers with the new storytellers. All of it, the idea being to encourage listeners to become participants, to make listeners the content of what we do.
I want to play something that's on the Transom website, and this is by somebody named David Greenberger, who I know you work with for Transom. So before we hear it, tell us something about him and what kind of audio work he's doing.
He's such an interesting guy. He used to work in a nursing home in up around Boston, and he would just talk to the people there, and then bit by bit almost began collaborating with them in a sense conversationally. And they would tell him about their lives, which were rich and surprising. And he would record and then write down what they say. And we've worked a lot. We had him come up to Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, where I live, and we have our radio stations. And you just visit and talk with people, and then he renders them in this amazing way where he becomes almost a lyricist and vocalist and gets bands to back him up as he says their words in a way that makes you hear them. It's a little it's different from a lot of the work we do, which is really about having the primary speaker tell his own story. David's a kind of a translator, interpreter, and his notion is that you will hear these stories more clearly through his, and I think you do, through the attachment he has and through his memory of the conversation, maybe than you would if it was an old person speaking and your first thought was, this person is old. And so when David's voice says it, it makes you think differently about the content.
Okay, so this is David Greenberger, and you can find this on the transom.org website.
My husband's father was a genius. He had 16 patents in his own name, and he was a brain. But he had no feeling, just all brains. My husband, he did as little as possible. He didn't like to work. I don't remember how long we were married, but it seemed like a long time. He was a lot of fun to start with. He just got a little sober when he got older. Not much fun. And you gotta keep me laughing if you wanna make me happy. Anyway, he died. Gosh, I can't remember when he died.
That's David Greenberger, and that's one of the many pieces that's on the transom.org website, which was created by my guest Jay Allison, and who is also the co-producer of the This I Believe series, and now the This I Believes, old and new, from the Edward R. Murrow days and the new NPR days, are collected in a new book and CD collection. When you started on radio, did people say to you, oh, you have a great radio voice?
No, I don't think I do particularly. I mean, all my early pieces were, I wasn't in them at all. I just, they were just other people. And I did a piece about a tattooist in D.C., and I actually had to put in a line of narration. I was scared to death. I recorded it probably 50 times, just trying to get my voice to relax and this, because, when you talk, then you have to decide who you are and how you sound. And that's very disconcerting, I think, for people. I mean, every time I coach one of these This I Believe essays, I do them all over the phone and people go to studios where they are. And they're so nervous, I think, because it's this idea of who am I? How do I sound? How should I sound? And it's taken me a long time to feel remotely comfortable with it. And, I still don't even. I mean, even sitting here talking to you, the part of my brain is wondering, how do I sound?
When you say you have to figure out who you are before you can start recording, that sounds like a very theater thing to say, but you're not in a role when you're playing yourself.
But we're performing, aren't we? I mean, I think that's something that maybe a lot of the newspaper reporters who now are at public radio need to understand, is that it is a performance medium. We have to keep people's attention. We have to be aware of rhythm and pace and climax and scene setting and all those sorts of values that maybe aren't associated with media that aren't based in time.
Well, you've just put yourself on the paradox of what we often try to do in radio, which is like, be yourself, don't be phony. Be natural, be yourself, but make sure that you're lively and funny and focused. And
I know,
it's
not
so
easy.
It's really hard, and it makes being yourself kind of problematic.
I think sometimes, I use a lot of my old theater director techniques in working with people to get them to do that. And some of it is to find a different point of focus than any of those things and get them to maybe just stand up instead of sitting down, or to have them yell it through one time and then say, okay, good, now just speak it, but just the way you did when you were yelling. And people sometimes find they have to get around themselves. They have to get past themselves to be themselves.
Now, you moved to Cape Cod in 1986. And in 2000, you started a new NPR radio station on the Cape and another NPR radio station in Nantucket, and now there's a third on Martha's Vineyard.
They're three sticks, as we call them. They're three transmitters, but they all come from one place. It's hard to cover that area because there's, so much darn water.
That's right. These are, there's the Cape and then there's the two islands. So was there no easy to hear public radio there? I know you could, when the weather was good, draw in the Boston stations.
Yeah, they drifted in, but, you know, Cape Cod and the islands are not Boston, and I felt, I mean, being a public radio lifer for one thing, but also then just a resident of a community, I felt like, oh, this place needs its own public radio station. We need to have our own identity reflected. We need to understand each other better here. And so starting the stations was to do that. And also I wanted to know my neighbors better, and I wanted the radio station to be a way that that maybe that could happen.
Well, you said, you know, you wanted on the local stations to have a sense of place, a sense of the local identity. And one of the ways you've done that is through what you describe as sonic IDs. Tell us what they are.
They're like tiny little portraits or stories that air interstitially through the broadcast day. I mean, most public radio stations now have block programming, even like yours, with all due respect. And it's and there's not much time left to carve out the local identity. And some stations have, a call-in show or other things. But we use the tiny little bits of time in between to try to, like a signature for our place. So we go out and we record stories and little portraits and overheard conversations and poems and songs. And we invite the listeners to call in and they tell us stories. And all of these air in like 30 and 60 second breaks, and they're unheralded. They don't have titles. It's just they just pop out. So you have this sense of parallel existence between the place you live and then the news you're hearing of the world you live in. And if they're good, I think what you do is you look at the radio. And if I'm sitting with someone and they're listening and then I see them turn to look at the radio when one of these comes on, then I know that it worked.
It's funny, looking at the radio, I know exactly what you mean. I want to play one of the sonic IDs that you did, and it's about scallops clapping. Do these shellfish actually clap? What does that mean?
Well, I need to correct you because they're called scallops up where we come from. But I grew up further south, and I actually went on the air and introduced them as scallops. They clap their shells. You'll hear, but the. But the local scallopers called the radio station and said, look, tell Allison, we don't know where he comes from, but up here we call him scallops. So I had to go back and retract the ID, and now I'm correcting you.
So tell us what we're going to be hearing.
Scallops clapping.
Okay, here it goes.
Listen. Scallops clapping on Martha's Vineyard. You're listening to the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH Radio.
You know, I eat scallops, but who knew that they make sounds like that? I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, they after they're caught, they sit there and they kind of gulp.
Oh. And there's another sonic idea I want our listeners to hear, and this will speak for itself.
The worst thing about living on Nantucket for a teenager is probably the boredom.
Stephen Hamblin of Nantucket.
So Jay, how did this bored teenager find his way to the radio station?
As somebody found him. I mean, we have people going out with tape recorders all the time. Like I said, I get old cassette recorders and things off eBay, and we invite our listeners to come borrow them and take them out and record things. And that one was done by an intern set to music, and the music's just right. But, you know, a lot of the pieces we have are it's kind of an ongoing oral history project in a way, because we'll go out and record people who've been living there for generations, and just the sound of their voices, that you can tell that sound, that accent is going. And we've recorded people who have died soon thereafter. We continue to keep their stories in rotation. You know, I have to go back and retrack it, and I say the late whoever it was. But bit by bit, over the years, we're developing this kind of community oral history of people describing the place we live. That's what they're all really about. We all live in this place together. We're all neighbors, and here's another one of us.
So has your listening changed? I mean, do you actually listen to radio a lot?
Well, I do because we've got these little public radio stations that I started, and I really love listening to them. And I love it when they do something wonderful, when the, you know, one of the when there's a moment on that station that's thrilling. It, it's thrilling to me. There was a rare bird, for instance, out on Martha's Vineyard, and our local bird guy called in on the cell phone in the middle of morning edition and said, "I'm on my way. You know, there hasn't been a falcon like this here ever in my experience." Wait, and he was yelling at other drivers, and it was all in the air, and the thrill he had, and the host trying to, you know, moderate it, completely unexpected, happening in the instant. And, you know, for that, I would listen to the radio.
Well, Jay Allison, thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry.
Jay Allison co-created the revived version of This, I Believe, and co-edited the new companion book.